Good day, and welcome to the Atterbury UEFA Bank June 2016 results conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Alina Sanchez. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Atterbury UEFA Bank June 2016 results conference call. It's a pleasure to have with us in the call today the management team of Atterbury UEFA Bank, Mr. Mohamed Elketani, Chairman and CEO, and the general managers, Mr. Omar Bonjou, Mr. Boufker Dji, Mr. Ismail Douiri, and Mr. Talal El Belaj. The call will start with a presentation by management, and then we can open the floor for question and answers. Mr. Elketani, please go ahead.
Good morning and good afternoon. This is Ismail Douiri speaking. Mr. Elketani apologizes because he had a last-minute emergency, but we are all here and ready to answer your questions. What I suggest is that we go through the presentation that you must all have received. Maybe a first section on the economic environment. Everywhere in the countries where we operate, we see a general improvement, with clearly the countries in Central Africa still suffering from the low oil prices and the restrictions coming from budget spending. Inflation is overall very low in all the geographies where we operate. Maybe it's worth zooming on Morocco, where 2016 is not a particularly good year in terms of growth, especially because of the impact of the agriculture that is in contraction after an exceptional year in 2015. Also because the non-agricultural GDP is not picking up as quickly as anticipated and only expected to reach 3.1%. It's important to note that it's highly dependent on growth in France, Spain, and Italy. The other important element is the significant improvement in the external accounts, mostly coming from a decrease or a lower charge coming from oil imports, but also from exports picking up, driven by a number of industries that are fully integrated with the European supply chains. As a result, foreign currency reserves have been increasing and are reaching a record high at 7.3 months' worth of imports. Budget deficit is progressively going back to the government stated target of 3%-3.5%, but it's still above 4%, and debt is standing at 63.3%. As a result of all this, it's important to note that the first half of 2016 has seen two separate movements in terms of on the yield curve. A first movement until April downward and significantly down, contrary to many expectations. We thought that 2016 would be a year of stabilization. We had a good surprise on the trading side, coming from the fact that interest rates continued to go down, with market participants expecting the central bank to lower again its interest rate as of June from 2.25% to potentially 2%. That was the expectations, and it explains why the short part of the yield curve was approximately around 2% until the 52-week benchmark. What happened is that the central bank left interest rates unchanged and markets corrected back since that date to a level around 2.25% until 52 weeks. It's also important to note that long-term interest rates remain very low, with the 10-year, which is more significant than the 15-year in terms of liquidity, trading at 3.30%. The stock exchange has posted a rather good performance in terms of stock prices or indices, but the volumes remained low. and you have all the different multiples that that are exposed. You also have a number of data on all the countries where we're present in terms of growth. One word about Tunisia, because it is the country that has the most significant currency impact on our earnings. If you look at just the spot prices between June 2015 and June 2016, the movement is 12%, but on average, if you look at the flow, the impact on the flow, so that's things that you will see, for instance, in our net banking income, it has an impact of 4.9%. And then for Senegal, Ivory Coast, I mean, the rest of the countries are indexed to the euro, and the euro has a positive impact or movement compared to the dirham of 0.5%. When you compare first half of 2015 and first half of 2016. The banking industry in Morocco has remained in a situation of low to moderate growth, with deposits growing only 5.3% and loans growing even lower at 2.7% over the previous 12 months. And if you separate retail loans from corporate loans, you realize that most of the growth is coming from retail components that have been growing at 4.7%, whereas corporate loans have remained in negative territory until the end of the semester and posted, as of June, 1.2% growth. The other important element to note is that there has been a significant improvement in the risk environment, and we try to have a long-term focus or view on what happened to NPLs in Morocco. And you can see that we've had semesters where the increase in NPLs of the overall industry was above 5 billion dirhams in a semester. We're back to a situation where we are only at 1.5 billion change over the first semester, which is one of the lowest movements in the past 5 years. You see it also in the shape of the NPL ratio, the average NPL ratio for banks in Morocco, where it's stabilizing around 7.5%. Now, let's move to our IFRS consolidated statements, where as of June 2016, we've had generally good semester with growth of total assets of 3.1%, net banking income 3.5%, and net income group share 7.9% at 2.5 billion dirhams. One word maybe on the branches, because you see a significant growth. That growth is mostly coming from Wafa Cash, our subsidiary in Morocco, that continues its agency model by recruiting a number of existing branches and equipping them with the brand, with the IT, but not really investing in the physical distribution. Whereas at the level of the bank, the growth in the branches has significantly slowed down for the past years. And I think that the figure I have in mind for last year was approximately 60 new branches over 12 months in 2015. Now, the net banking income has reached 10.1 billion dirhams over the first semester, up 3.5%, with net interest income remaining stable, net fee income increasing by 12%, and income from market activities increasing by 8%. You can have also a split of that 3.5 growth by business units. So the bank in Morocco, its net banking income has grown by 1.4%, specialized financial companies by 4.4%, and most of the growth came from international retail banking with a growth of 9.4%, or if we use constant exchange rates between mostly Tunisia and the sub-Saharan subsidiaries, that growth would have been 10.8%. Now let's go back to the previous split and try to understand what happened to the NIMs that have remained stable at 5.8 billion dirhams. Two very opposite movements, one in Morocco with a contraction of the net interest margin of 2.3%, and another one which is a significant growth in international retail banking with a growth of 7.3%. In Morocco, the contraction comes from a very slow growth, loan growth. So the figure of 2% that you have is just comparing June to June, but if you look at the average loans over the period, it was almost 0% when you compare the two semesters. And then it's coming also from a contraction of the NIMs, coming mostly from the top part. So there has been, in a very slow credit market, there has been a lot of competition on large loans, and most of the growth in the first semester came from some very large loans that were priced at a very low level, taking into account the successive rate decreases or drops coming from the central bank. And then in international retail banking, we have also a contraction of the NIMs, but in an environment where loan growth was much higher at 9.4%. You have also a split by country or contributor, where you can infer another significant point. With regards to Tunisia. Tunisia, when you look at it locally in local currency, has been very dynamic in terms of loan growth, with a 14% growth in loans, whereas when you apply the exchange rate movement, and this time it's just comparing end of June to end of June, it drops to 1.8% in dirham terms. So now, for Morocco in particular, I mentioned that the growth came from large loans. It's particularly true in our case, where when you compare the growth of the first semester, so when you compare June to December, our growth in loans is almost 10% annualized. So we are, that pace is, for us, not necessarily something that we can sustain over the second half, because a number of large loans were disbursed to top ranking and safe corporates at very low interest rates. And it shows also in the market share that has significantly improved. So 1 point in one semester, given our size and the competitive environment, is a very good performance. This again is not something that we think we can do in the second semester at the same pace, at least. Maybe with retail loans, we can sustain that kind of effort, because we've had a very good beginning of the year in terms of consumer loans, and the trend seems to continue over the second half. Then we can also talk about the fees, and the consolidated fees have increased by almost 12%, with an even higher performance coming from Morocco. This is not only the impact of our sustained efforts to recruit new clients and equip them, it's also the result of a very strong focus on pricing, on making sure that not only we have the right price, and we often are not the cheapest, and so it means that we have some pricing power, and we are able to, despite the fact that we're not the cheapest bank, continue increasing some of our fees, but it's also reviewing in a very disciplined way all the all the exemptions that we give to our clients, and make sure that we use our analytics tool to create the most transparent and systematic way to offer those exemptions to only our best clients. Then, in the international retail banking, we suffered again from this impact, this currency impact. So when you look at Tunisia in constant exchange rates, the fees there have increased by 17.4%. But then, because of all those elements, we only have 8.6% in dirham terms for the fee growth in international retail banking. A few words on general operating expenses that have grown only by 5.4%. So focus on cost control with, however, some factors that are growing faster than the average, and mostly around IT spending. And so in an environment where net banking income hasn't grown as fast, obviously our cost income ratio has increased to 45.3%. You can have the split of that growth of expenses by business lines in the next slide. And maybe the other important factor is the decrease of the cost of risk at 1.1 billion dirhams, minus 5%. And there, the analysis, the general analysis is on page 22, but I think it's even more interesting to look at page 23, where you have for each business line, you have the growth in loans, the NPL ratio, and the coverage ratio. So you can see that in Morocco, where most of the growth in the charge to earnings has occurred, the NPL ratio hasn't moved since December. So it remained at 6% constant. What happened is that the coverage ratio improved. Why is that? We are in a situation, as we said earlier, where we are not seeing new major risks appearing, but we are also in a situation where we see collections remaining very low and difficult to get. So our IFRS models are constantly backtested, and we prefer to have more caution with regards to the expected cash flows from collections in the future. This is why we increased our coverage ratio in the first semester for loans in Morocco. In international retail banking, we see an improvement in the NPL ratio as a result of the strong discipline of the previous years, but also because we had a number of bad loans in the past years that are now either being collected or being written off. We also see that in international retail banking, we have been improving the coverage ratio. You have in page 24 the dirham movements by business lines, and you can see that in Morocco, the cost of risk has increased, whereas in international retail banking, it has dropped to a level of 0.36%. Again, here, in terms of guidance, it shouldn't be considered as a sustainable level, the 0.36% for international retail banking. So as a result of everything that we described, we have posted a net income of 3 billion dirhams, up 7.1%, and a net income group share of 2.5 billion, up 7.9%, an improving ROE at 15.5%, and also the ROA improved by 5 basis points, still at 1.4%. It's worth also mentioning that there was a change in scope for Société Ivoirienne de Banque, where we increased our consolidated stake to 75% from 51% compared to last year, and CBAO from 52% to 83%. And so, obviously, it has no impact on the growth of net income, consolidated net income, page 26, where we see an increase of 35% of the net income coming from international retail banking. But it had an impact on page 28 on the net income group share because of that change in scope of consolidation. You have also the details of the detailed contribution of each entity to net income and to net income group share. And you have the split of ROA by business on page 30. One quick word on regulatory ratios. With the capital adequacy ratio on a consolidated basis, but also on at the parent company level, significantly above the minimum of 9% Tier 1, so more than 100 basis points margin in Tier 1. And then the capital adequacy ratio is the result of the Tier 1 and our policy of renewing Tier 2 subordinated debt at the right pace, depending on market conditions. Again, the liquidity ratio is above the minimum. There is a slight mistake that I would like you to correct if you can. It's 70% minimum requirement. It is in the footnote, but it's not in the graph. So the minimum in 2016 is 70%, and we're still way above that limit. Just to conclude, you have a long-term view of the stock with a clear outperformance of our stock over a long period, but an underperformance so far this year, despite the fact that we did better than the banking sector industry or index. And you have also a number of valuation ratios and the comparison to the average of the sector. I think I'll stop here and maybe open it up for questions. Thank you very much.
Operator, please, can you open up for Q&A?
Perfect, thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach your equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, while we wait for some questions, perhaps a couple of questions from my side. In terms of the net interest margins in Morocco, there has been some compression in the first half. Can you give us some guidance on what do you expect for the second half of the year, and also your view, according to your view on interest rates. And in terms of NPL formation in Morocco, the formation is slowing down, but there continues to be an increase in NPLs. Are there any particular sectors driving credit quality deterioration in the first half of this year? In the past, it has been real estate developers. To some extent, is this also is this still a driver for higher NPLs at the system level? Thank you.
The guidance sur la marge d'intérêt pour le deuxième semestre. Il y aura plus de contraction si rapide.
I think we all agree that the second half shouldn't see as sharp a contraction as in the first half. If only because we don't expect to have as many large loans to large corporates. And we expect the growth to continue to be more sustained and higher for retail loans than for corporates.
Puis, un élément supplémentaire, c'est que un certain nombre de corporates commencent maintenant à vouloir s'orienter sur des crédits en devise. C'est les entreprises qui ont des flux avec l'étranger. Donc, ça n'a pas d'impact sur le dira. Et les coûts sont moins chers, sont moins élevés sur la devise.
So, and then your other question had to do with the NPL. There maybe Mr. Bellage, il continue à y avoir quand même une hausse des créances en sous-traitance, même si elle est beaucoup plus faible. Est-ce qu'il y a des secteurs en particulier qui continuent à souffrir? Dans un passé récent, c'était la promotion immobilière, c'est toujours ce secteur-là, c'est d'autres.
C'est l'impact aussi principalement de la FAMIR, le déclassement de la FAMIR,
in the first half, there was one important element is that all banks have moved their loan to Samir into NPL category. It was in the watch list for most banks, I hope, at least for them. But in our case, it had no impact on provisions, but it had an impact on NPL. So that's a large amount for the whole system. Probably if you take that out, maybe, et si on enlève, est-ce que les NPL auraient augmenté quand même?
Non.
If you take that out, that movement, the overall NPL would have decreased in the industry.
Okay.
La suite.
Thank you.
Et donc, est-ce qu'il y a encore des secteurs qui...
C'est les problèmes des délais de paiement, on dirait, qui touchent un peu BTP, et puis là, le problème du tourisme, avec, je dirais, les problématiques un peu de demande extérieure.
So, two big things that we are watching or careful about. Construction and civil works that suffer from late payments, usually triggered by the government, by the budget, so either directly or indirectly, slow payments. And then the second industry would be tourism, where a number of, capacity was built in an environment where demand is softer than it used to be, without being totally catastrophic, but we don't see a number of usual markets being as dynamic as they were in the recent past, probably because they're influenced by the overall security environment in our region.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Are there any more questions from any of the participants? There appears to be no questions at this time.
Non, c'est-à-dire que c'est pas ça, Rachid a déjà fait. C'est avant de l'événement. Ceux qui nous suivent.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. We will now take our next question for Godfrey Bonzwea, Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the call. Could you talk about the potential acquisition in Egypt? When we can expect to the conclusion in the bidding process, and how you think about acquisitions in terms of pricing.
So maybe the only thing I can address is the second part of the question, and the general approach is that we. Have a permanent process with our board looking at a number of countries through a number of criteria, and we have priorities. We have a number of countries that show up as a priority, usually because we think that an investment there would enhance the growth profile without hurting too much the risk profile. And so that's, I would say, making sure that it's a disciplined or focused search. And then on a case-by-case basis, it's obviously making sure that there is a majority of the capital available or a controlling stake. And if not, that at least there is a certain path to control. And then the valuation is really based on fundamentals. It's based on a business plan that is challenged by operational teams, that is built not only on the existing past performance of the asset, but also on a number of initiatives that we think we can bring by transforming the target. Based on skills that we have and that maybe other market participants may not have. It could be in some cases also based on risk appetite. In many cases we have seen international banks in local markets skimming the market and focusing only on small segments, whereas we want to go usually deeper and address the SME opportunity, the emerging middle class. We are also very disciplined in terms of discount rate and logic behind it, because we also report to our board on a number of metrics, and one of them is almost a private equity-like metric, where we need to make sure that if we expense cash, then we reimburse that investment with the right IRR, assuming that we would be able to sell the asset at the current market prices. So that also creates a lot of discipline in terms of dividend extraction and in terms of business plan stress and also macroeconomic stress. As you can see, we're starting to see some volatility coming from the currency, and it's important that that kind of volatility doesn't hurt the expected IRR. So these are, you know, the general aspects that guide us.
Thanks for that. Could you give any more color on what your target IRR is for an acquisition? And perhaps give a sense as to whether you think
I think we're broadly in line with EFG Hermes in their discount rates that they use in their research broadly.
Okay. Would there be a need to raise capital at all?
Sorry?
Would there be a need to raise capital?
A need for capital, I will repeat what we have said. If we have no major acquisition, then our need is zero, including with the current conversion path to Basel III, to full implementation of Basel III, without changing our dividend policy. If we have a major acquisition, when I say major, it's over 30 to 40 million euros a year, then obviously one of those elements would change, either the dividend policy or the capital or sale or disposal of some assets. So it's a combination of these that may occur if there is a large acquisition.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There appear to be no further questions at this time. I think if there are no more questions, we can perhaps end the call at this point. So I think thank you for having the call, and thank you everyone for dialing in. If you want to make any concluding remarks, Mr. Duidi.
Well, thank you very much for all people attending. Obviously, this conference call took place later than usual, just for calendar reasons. So many of you may have had the opportunity to meet Rachid Ketani in London with EFG Hermes. We will also be in other investment conferences this week, and hope that information communicated helps you understand better the stock. We remain at your disposal for any further question, and you have the contact of Ibtissam Abouheria, our Head of Investor Relations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.